Hello and welcome to Superbugs and You, true stories from scientists and patients around the world. This podcast series explores the threat of antimicrobial resistance, which occurs when bacteria, viruses, fungi, and parasites change over time and no longer respond to antibiotics and other medicines. In other words, they become superbugs. I am Dr. Marnie Peterson, and I've spent the last 25 years focused on this topic, both as an educator and researcher, and I will be your host.
What we're trying to do is to find the right balance and the right innovation framework to ensure that we can give the right antibiotics to the right patients at the right time today, to ensure also that future patients will have access to the right antibiotic at the right time in the future.
On January 1st, 2024, Italy assumed the presidency of the G7, the group that brings together Italy, Canada, France, Germany, Japan, the United Kingdom, and the United States of America, with additional participation from the European Union. The G7 is united by common values and principles and plays an invaluable role in defending freedom and democracy and addressing global challenges. Antimicrobial resistance, or AMR, has been identified as a key topic for upcoming G7 discussions. Italy recognizes the urgency of improving strong governance and leadership in the AMR response. This involves accelerating intersectoral investments and action to preserve antimicrobials as life-saving medicines. This podcast will feature clinicians, advocates, and policy leaders from Italy. They share the challenges and opportunities in implementing effective stewardship and clinical practice in the Italian healthcare system, as well as how effective policy can transform the landscape to battle AMR.
My name is Francesca Chiara, and I'm currently the lead for the Antimicrobial Stewardship Project at the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, or CDRAP. I've been working on antimicrobial resistance over the past 8 years.
What are some of the key areas that you're focused on?
We are, of course, focused on antimicrobial resistance in general, but we are particularly interested in promoting responsible use of antimicrobials. And we do this through different type of activities. We promote education among healthcare professionals, but also the public. And we promote access to knowledge in the field of antimicrobial resistance.
As you know, this episode is specifically focused in Italy and the efforts to combat antimicrobial resistance in the region. That is also your home country, and you have a lot of connections there. I'm just curious from your perspective why this is unique and what you're hoping listeners will take away from this episode.
Yes, of course, I'm Italian, and so I have a vested interest in Italy, developing specific activities focused on AMR. But there are different things that we should consider when we think about Italy and the Italian context in relation to AMR. First of all, if you look at recent data that were published by the Italian Medicine Agency, there's been progress on reducing the spread of antimicrobial resistance on the Italian territory, but there is still a lot of work to be done. Specifically, I was saying there's been a reduction, but still antimicrobial consumption and also the rate and the burden of antimicrobial resistance is particularly high in Italy when compared to other European countries. Especially in the community, there is quite important use of antimicrobials at the community level. The other aspect of why we should focus at the moment on Italy is because Italy will help the G7 presidency in 2024. And so I think it's a very pivotal moment for us to focus on this country and really push this agenda to really promote dialogue among the public, but also among the policymakers that we'll meet to discuss G7 policies and actions to stop AMR.
My name is Mariano Votta, and I work for an Italian NGO committed on health issues.
I would like, before we get into the conversation of your important work, I'd like for our listeners just to understand a bit of your background, how you got interested in this area and working in patient advocacy.
So I work for an NGO that was founded in Italy in 1978. So more than 40 years ago, it was put in place with a specific law, the National Health System, that split responsibility between the national government and the 20 regions in which my country is divided. Citizens decide to organize themselves in order to reduce health inequalities, taking consideration that all of us, we have the same rights as citizens, but if you are in the north, the south, etc., we can face different quality standards, different waiting lists, different number of health facilities. And this was the standing point of my organization, the need to guarantee equal rights, the protection, the rights of the citizens, and talking about the health issues, the rights of the patients. Personally, I started to work more than 20 years ago in my organization, where I am appointed as responsible of the European Affairs and director of our European branch called Active Citizenship Network. And about our role in the field on antimicrobial resistance, we work the front of the civic society organization and the actors involved to fight antimicrobial resistance, to support the One Health approach, both towards the politicians, but towards the citizenship, to provide decision makers and relevant stakeholders involved in the definition, implementation on AMR policy with a specific civic point of view that complements the point of view of the researcher, of the politician, of the private sector, to qualify the role of the civil society organization in the field, producing data together with recommendation.
From your organization and other data you have available, what is the citizen's perception of antibiotics and how to use them, or even when to use them?
Yes, one of the characteristics of my organization is to collect the data, complaints, and requests of information from the citizens. Talking about antimicrobial resistance, we worked a lot in terms of healthcare associated infection, and then on antimicrobial resistance. A part of this has been published in Italy very recently, a research that highlights the relationship between the citizens and their use of antibiotics. According to this survey that allowed to find information by 1,000 adult Italians that has been interviewed, the majority of them, 83%, who show a correct knowledge of antibiotics, indicating that they should be used to combat bacterial infection, in contrast to a minority, that is 46% of the population, who instead believe that they can be used to treat infection caused by virus. Almost all of the people interviewed consider the statement that antibiotic must be prescribed by a doctor. And 17% is the proportion of the people who believe that keeping an antibiotic at home to take it if necessary, without having to go to the doctor. This is one of the paradox of when we talk about antibiotics. They are the victim of their success, we can say. In fact, during the first wave of the pandemic, when the COVID vaccine were not still discovered, we have interviewed 700 pharmacists and 700 citizens. One of the main requests of the citizens that come to the pharmacist, it was, please provide antibiotics, even without prescription, to be sure that in case I have something that can be useful for me, even if this could be wrong, could be also a mistake. So this is still something that persists in a very large part of the population. For this reason, we need to invest in health education to empower citizens, because otherwise there is the risk to overuse antibiotics, and of course, to produce much more antibiotic resistance.
How does the issue of AMR in Italy compare to other countries in Europe?
Before the pandemic, the phenomenon caused about 33,000 deaths in Europe each year from infection caused by antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Of these, more than 10,000 1/3 of the total occur in my country, in Italy. This is the sad record held by my country, which tops the continental ranking. We are at the top, unfortunately. To all this should be added another data. Antibiotic consumption in Italy is higher than the European average, both at the territorial and hospital level, especially in the age groups between 2 and 5 years old, so very young people, and very old people over 85 years old. And that, above all, in my country, in Italy, antibiotics are inappropriately prescribed in 1/4 of cases, according, again, an official source of information, the National Report on Antibiotic Use in Italy. I can also add some other data at European level. So, in the last 2 years, and particularly during the pandemic, there was a general reduction in consumption at European level, and more markedly, so much more also in Italy. So, this difference is gradually diminishing. Are reducing. Last point, Italy remains one of the European countries with the greatest use of broad spectrum molecules, which have the greatest impact on antibiotic resistance and are therefore considered second line, not the first option, we can say, with a worsening trend over the last 2 years. The message is that we have to increase a lot the commitment to fight antimicrobial resistance. Talking about Italy, talking also at the European level, and as we talking about antimicrobial resistance, as the pandemic, neglected pandemic or silent tsunami, this is a global issue that should be addressed as much as possible in a very powerful way. Yes, it's a good point, the national plan to fight antimicrobial resistance, because in Italy exists a national plan to fight antimicrobial resistance that has been put in place in 2022 and it will expire in 2025. And he followed the previous one that was expired during the pandemic, extended until December 2021, because it was impossible to update the plan in the middle of the pandemic. In any case, this is a very relevant political document, a strategic guidelines and operational indications to deal with the antimicrobial resistance emergency in Italy in the coming years, following a multidisciplinary approach and in line with One Health vision. The plan was prepared, it was drafted by a working group of very high level of experts and of course approved by the Ministry of Health and relevant Italian institutions.
Public and private organizations tend to do some sort of patient engagement in their work. How do you describe to these organizations the impact of AMR on the citizens and the population as a whole? Who do you see as the primary stakeholders in the fight against AMR?
Exactly. My organization is the only civic organization officially mentioned in the national plan that for the first time recognized as a target the whole population and recognized as a stakeholder also the so-called intermediate body of the civil society, like my organization. This is important. For each year of 2023, this year 2024, and for the next one, 2025, the government has allocated for each of the 3 years for 40 million euro. So there is also economic resource. Talking about the national plan to fight antimicrobial resistance, it's important that each member state, talking about Europe, can have their own national plan to fight antimicrobial resistance from one end. And from our perspective, that also the citizens' organization, the patient advocacy groups are recognized and involved in the implementation to support the communication, the raise awareness initiative that are part of the plan, in order to support the public policy, the public effort to fight antimicrobial resistance. I can also provide you information about some characteristics of the national plan to fight antimicrobial resistance in Italy, because it's divided into four areas: training to the professionals, training to healthcare professionals, information, communication, research, and national and mainly international cooperation. This is important. There are also three pillars: integrated surveillance and monitoring of antimicrobial resistance and healthcare associated infection should be monitored by the public institutions. Prevention of healthcare associated infection in hospital and community setting, also at outside hospitals, and appropriate use of antibiotics in human and veterinary setting, and proper management and disposal of antibiotics and contaminated materials, also to reduce infection. Just to summarize, the joint effort, public-private, to find new vaccine to fight COVID was crucial. Can we identify the same commitment, a joint effort, public funds, research led by private, or in general, to put together public and private effort to find new antibiotics, etc.? The second point, to fight COVID-19 pandemic, it was crucial the commitment of the whole healthcare workforces. In front of them, we need to provide eternal gratitude also for their sacrifice in human life. I don't find this kind of commitment talking about the so-called neglected pandemic. And also part of the research should allow to the healthcare professional with some tools that can also be extremely useful for them. For instance, to split from virus and bacterial infection. In some cases, should be extremely relevant also for them to have a tool that can immediately help them. The third sector is the sense of the responsibility of the majority of the population that allowed to overcome the pandemic with correct behavior, to follow the instruction and law, to imagine that my decision have a positive or negative impact to amplify the effect of the COVID-19 pandemic or to reduce the effect of the COVID-19 pandemic. Can we find the same level of consciousness among the population talking about AMR? So this kind of element should be emphasized in three different levels. Research, to invest in research, of course, but please invest also in health literacy, in empowerment of the citizens and patients, invest on a training of healthcare professionals as well. One of the risks today is a lot of are interested to invest, of course, in research. This is crucial. We support 100%, but please do not forget also the role of the civil society organization, the role of the healthcare professional in this common fight to antimicrobial resistance. And in fact, about our concrete initiative, this year we have produced a manifesto and we have asked the Italian government that during 2024 is leading the G7 to put in the agenda of the G7 the topic of antimicrobial resistance. It was produced a document. It was realized also an official meeting. I was there in person with the Italian Ministry of Health last 10th of January in Rome. It was a crucial request to put AMR at the top of priority, talking about global health threats in the context of the G7. And we want to support this kind of message. Also, the commitment of the private sector that can much more produce effect if they are also committed to empower, not only to provide messages about product produced with or without, but why is important? Why should be the effect of some decision in terms of reducing use of antibiotics and so reducing the antimicrobial resistance? I think that public and private commitment is crucial if they can join effort for the research, first of all, but also to implement vaccination policy, to implement the training initiative for healthcare professionals, and to take in consideration that also among the citizens, the population, there are the so-called intermediate bodies that could be in support on public policy.
Let's talk about that. I would say that the numbers are staggering. There's a lot of room to reduce consumption, appropriate use of antimicrobials. There's a lot of opportunity there. And I know you've been focused on that. And then let's talk about your work in the European level, because you're local, but then regional, and then you're very global.
My organization is the only one citizens organization mentioned the national plan fighting antimicrobial resistance in Italy. From one end, it's fine for us, but from the other end, why just one organization is mentioned? Why only one is active on the topic? Why just one is committed to fight antimicrobial, to raise awareness citizens, to provide information to the patients? Should be 100, 1,000. So this is important to invest much more about what is the impact of antimicrobial resistance globally, why it's important, the commitment of each one of us. One of the main problems in talking about antimicrobial resistance is that the pharmacy company do not invest in a patient engagement when they talk about antimicrobial resistance. They have developed a stakeholder engagement when they talk about a specific disease, of course. But when they talk about resistance, is something that is not so developed. So they don't have so many relationship also with the actor of the civil society, patient advocacy groups that are much more devoted to antimicrobial resistance. And I do not agree 100% that now many are interested to identify the antimicrobial resistance survivor, but all of us are survivor in terms that when I was a child, I take antibiotics for a severe infection, now I'm fine, blah, blah, blah. So much more than the case history that, of course, could be interesting for the media, but we need to leverage the attention, the topic in front of the institutions, and this awareness among the population, among all the citizens, patients first of all, but then again, all the population. My decision can have a positive or negative impact. Why you, Ministry of Health, don't work together with the Ministry of Environment or together with the Ministry of Economic Development, in which there are many companies not devoted to, not pharma company, other company that can have an impact to reduce the use of antibiotics for their production, with the same goal to be reached.
My name is Damiano De Felice. I'm the Director of Development and External Engagement at CARPEX. Thank you for inviting me to the podcast.
I want to give a little bit of background to our listeners of your area of expertise. How did you navigate from that area of study into a focus on infectious diseases?
I'm a political scientist, so I'm not a doctor, I'm not a chemist. What drove me to drug-resistant infections and infectious diseases was mainly the significant burden on vulnerable people, mainly in low- and middle-income countries. So my background is in human rights. I did a PhD at the London School of Economics on human rights and specifically on the responsibilities of large multinational companies to respect human rights in low- and middle-income countries. One of the case studies of my research was the Access to Medicine Index, which is a ranking produced by the Access to Medicine Foundation. I was lucky enough to present the case study at the conference where the founder of the Access to Medicine Foundation was, and he invited me to join the team. So I moved from looking at human rights in general to the right to health more specifically and access to medicine. And I stayed with the Access to Medicine Foundation for more than 8 years. When I was at the foundation, we started a new program specifically on antimicrobial resistance, looking at what different types of sectors within the pharmaceutical industry were doing to address the problem of drug-resistant infections. And this is how I got in touch with the leadership team of CARBEX, who then invited me to join a year and a half ago.
So you've made this transition to CARBEX. Describe that organization for people that may not be aware of the organization. What have you been tasked to do?
CARBEX is an accelerator. The X at the end of the name is about acceleration. We are a global, a non-profit partnership that supports the early stage development of new antibiotics, vaccines, and diagnostics to address antimicrobial resistance. Carbex was created in 2016, and the idea was fundamentally a way to implement a US National Action Plan on antimicrobial resistance. BARDA's mandate realized that the clinical pipeline was too poor, but their mandate was specifically to look at the advanced clinical pipeline, and so they decided to create an accelerator that could feed their work, and Boston University applied to the call for proposal from BARDA together with Wellcome. We receive funding now from 4 G7 countries, the US, the UK, Germany, and Canada, and 2 private foundations, the Gates Foundation and Wellcome. And they have entrusted us with almost $1 billion since the founding of Carbex in 2016. Usually these are projects coming out from universities or research institutions, small teams, usually small biotech companies or 5 to 10 people, spin-offs usually of university labs. And we are tasked with supporting them moving from laboratory studies to first-in-human studies. And so we support them with money, but also with a lot of technical and business and scientific support until they can show the safety of their programs. And then we stop funding them when they start phase 2, phase 3 clinical studies, which is when they test their efficacy in humans. And I am tasked with developing an external engagement activities. So I'm responsible with fundraising activities, managing the relationship with funders, and also contributing to the overall sustainability of the organization, the sustainability of our portfolio. And this is a joint responsibilities between our R&D team and what I do on external engagement.
And that's a perfect lead into a focus on Italy. This particular podcast is focused on Italy. And the overall conversation that we're having, it also centers around an upcoming G7 summit in 2024. And so we're having conversations with individuals around specifically within the country, what are some of the initiatives and how it fits within Europe in general. You're Italian, you grew up in Italy. What's the current picture of antibiotic resistance from your perspective in Italy, and what are some of the initiatives that impacts that you're trying to have?
The situation in Italy is difficult with respect to antimicrobial resistance. The latest data available coming from the European Center for Disease Prevention and Control estimates that 1/3 of all deaths in Europe attributable to antimicrobial resistance are in Italy. This is a consequence of multiple things which I sometimes do not understand, being not like a clinician or not someone that have been work, I think, within the healthcare system. It is true that Italy has always had an informal and friendly approach with respect to antibiotics. Many people use antibiotics like candies in Italy. Whenever you have whatever type of infection, you use antibiotic, even if you don't know whether it's bacterial. And so there is definitely more than can be done in the country. And this is why it is very promising to know the fact that the Minister of Health of Italy has announced that AMR will be one of the central themes of the health ministers meeting. And this is promising because we have a new government in Italy, and they have a real opportunity to look at what was wrong in the past 20 years, and if they won't decide to do something really to change the course. Usually, as a president of the G7, if you decide to make a topic a priority, you're expected to do something about it, and you have to lead by example. So this is why we're optimistic about the fact that Italy will improve its performance with respect to the management and the prevention of drug-resistant infections.
For clarity to the listeners, what is the G7 and why is it important?
The G7 is an informal group of high-income countries, industrialized democracies that come together on an annual basis to discuss mainly economic issues, but more broadly systemic problems at the global level. So the members of the G7 are the US, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and the United Kingdom. I think the European Union is invited as an observer or as a non-enumerated member to the group. But fundamentally, the reasons why the group is important and the gathering and the discussion taking place within the high-level head of state meetings, which is the summit, or the ministerial meetings on the different topics, including the health ministers meeting. The reasons why these meetings are important is that because the collective GDP of these countries is probably like half of the GDP of the world. And so there is a lot that these countries can do if they decide to use their financial power to address global issues. Antimicrobial resistance has been a topic of discussion at the G7 now for probably 6 or 7 years. I know it started probably in 2016, 2017, but it has become a recurrent issue that has been discussed with the health ministers meeting and in the summits by the heads of state or the heads of government since 2019, 2020. So we've not been surprised by the fact that Italy decided to make AMR one of the priority for the health ministers meeting. It is definitely promising the fact that it will be in the title of the three priorities. It will need to be addressed as a consequence both of the health ministers meeting and by the heads of state.
In addition to Italy, have you seen much action from other countries in the G7 related to AMR?
It is true to say also the fact that specifically on AMR innovation, we've seen a lot of progress by other G7 countries, both in terms of supporting R&D innovation directly with what is called push incentives, which is fundamentally providing funding directly to product developers to reduce the cost for themselves of conducting research. And we've seen progress also in terms of reforms of how antibiotics are procured and paid for, which is what usually is called pool incentives. So it's making sure that bringing an innovative and impactful antibiotic to the market is profitable enough so that you have private investors in this space supporting the projects. The UK government is a clear example of a country that has used its G7 presidency a couple of years ago to make great progress internally and internationally, and bringing the topic to the agenda, but also piloting a new way of paying for antibiotics and supporting multiple organizations in the R&D space, including Carbex and GARPI. So we have hope that Italy will use its presidency in 2024 to make progress as well, both in terms of the management of drug-resistant infections within the Italian hospitals in the different regions. Health is managed at the regional level in Italy, but also at the international level, joining and supporting the most promising initiatives, which are at the moment are addressing the problem.
Obviously, you're preparing, and would be some of the things, this is a little bit more open-ended, but these conversation and their ability to have impact will be a couple key global policy initiatives you'd like to see come out of this.
Our focus is on the products to address antimicrobial resistance, so to mainly innovative products. So you have to think about antibiotics or non-traditional therapeutics, preventative approaches like vaccines or diagnostics. So this is the main focus of our conversation with Italy and with other G7 governments. In reality, addressing AMR is a bigger problem, and you need many other interventions. But it's also true that resistance to antibiotics is a natural phenomenon. I know bacteria, when exposed to antibiotics, inevitably reproduce and evolve, and their genetic material changes. And so there will always be resistance, and there will always be a need for innovation. It is the job of governments and health systems to make sure that resistance is as low as possible, because otherwise innovation has to be very fast. And so it's always a little bit of a catch-up game in terms of like how quick resistance is developing and how quick innovation is following. So our job is to make sure that innovation is as quick as resistance. Generally, at the global level, we're falling behind. And this is why we're speaking with governments about increasing the funding for AMR innovation. It is true what you say about the fact that Italy will have an important role both at the local level and at the global level. Superbugs, drug-resistant infections, bacteria, as we have seen with COVID-19 and with the pandemic, they're similar to viruses. They know no borders, and many people are traveling to Italy for vacations or for tourism or for work, and they bring back bacteria with them because they travel and they take a lift like in the flights. I think that the expectation on Italy is to make sure that the G7 presidency is a catalyst for additional work, additional funding for work at the regional level. Again, health is a responsibility of the regions in Italy, and so there needs to be a concerted effort by the national central government, but also with the different regions. And obviously, as with any country where you have different regions, you have disparities within the country in terms of some regions managing AMR better than others. But there is definitely an important role that Italy has to play as well at the international level. We have seen now several G7 governments stepping up in terms of supporting the global pipeline for new products. Italy has not done that yet, but it has been common that countries have used the opportunities of the G7 presidency to raise awareness about the topic internally, discuss what is the best possible contribution that they can have, and then deciding how they can join initiatives like Carbex and others.
Since we're talking about business development, what is the current situation for the antibiotic pipeline? And how does Carbex fit into this process?
So the narrative about antibiotics and the current situation of the pipeline for new antibiotics revolves very often around the problem of the market failure and the lack of a market, and the problem of large pharmaceutical companies, small biotech companies, which have not enough incentives to put money behind R&D projects in this space. At Carbex, we start from a different perspective. I think our work looks at the potential impact of new products and the problems of the market and the lack of private investment is in reality a means to an end. I know we're not here to address a problem of a market. We're not here to make sure that something becomes profitable again for the sake of the profit. We're here because the normal way in which pharmaceutical innovation takes place is that, I know there is a lot of basic research funded by government, but because of the revenue and profit potential of innovation, when a new product reaches the market and reaches patients, there is a lot of private investment going into certain types of products within the pharmaceutical industry. So you have a lot of money going into gene therapy, into oncology, and the reasons why you have so much private funding going into these areas is because the potential for making money at the end of the innovation chain is very high, not because the innovation is not risky, but just because the payout at the end may be very significant. And so there is a lot of people, a lot of investors betting on what they think are the most promising projects. A significant number of them will fail, and those investors backing these projects will lose their money. But the few that actually make it until the end and bring new innovation to patients, they will make significant profit out of it. This is not the case for antibiotics anymore, unfortunately, for a series of different reasons related to the fact fundamentally that new doctors and physicians want to keep like new antibiotics as a last resort. And so there is not a volume fundamentally like for innovative products. If you bring like a new cardiovascular product to the market, a new oncology product to the market, each patient would want to have it and each physician would want to give it to their patients. This is not the case for new antibiotics where physicians rightly try to give patients the old antibiotic to see if it works, and then they wait until looking at the results of potential diagnostics to see if these work in the end or not to give the last resort antibiotic. The competition is also not necessarily like with the last new antibiotic, but it can be with generic antibiotic, which have been developed like 40 years ago, 50 years ago. These are very cheap. And so there is a lot of competition in terms of pricing also with very cheap antibiotics. So the combination of small markets and low prices means that in reality, the payout at the end of the innovation chain is very limited, which has created a situation in which private investors are not willing anymore to put money behind R&D projects. And this is why a significant amount of the funding that goes into the antibacterial R&D innovation chain now comes from governments via public-private partnerships such as CARB-X. Our job in the simplest way is to replenish the clinical pipeline. And so we will continue to stop at phase one. This is a consequence of the current situation of the global pipeline of antibacterial products and specifically antibiotics. The main problem being the fact that because of market dynamics and the way in which antibiotics are procured by both high-income countries and low- and middle-income countries, there is very little incentive for large pharmaceutical companies or even small biotech companies to develop new antibiotics. And our job is to make sure that clinical pipeline is richer and more numerous. We were tasked with the mission of supporting the most innovative projects which are in clinical development, whose main problem is not the lack of innovativeness, but it's a lack of funding, and to help them to get to a place where they are de-risked enough so that private investors may take them when they reach phase two, phase three clinical studies. A clear example of this relay within the AMR innovation chain has been the creation of the AMR Action Fund, which is a for-profit fund created by the pharmaceutical industry with some support from Wellcome and the European Investment Bank as well, whose main focus is in reality phase two, phase three. And their focus and our focus is not by chance. It was coordinated. And so our job is to support projects until they finalize their phase one clinical trials so that organizations like the AMR Action Fund and U.S. agencies like BARDA, which is a U.S. agency, can take the project forward.
Much of your work is balancing public-private partnerships. What are some of the benefits and challenges of government versus private investments in this space?
So the private sector and companies, whatever private or publicly traded companies, they have, they need to make money. This is their job. This is what they will do in the end. I think that what frustrates me about AMR is that it would be so easy for governments, in particular in certain countries where you have a national payers, a national healthcare system, fundamentally to transform the market for antibiotics just to have normal investing as impact investing, because they're creating a market that fundamentally develops new antibiotics. And this is the job of governments. I know companies are a tool because they're simple animals. They have like simple metrics and they want to make more money. It's the role of governments to make sure that the way for them to make more money is to achieve impact. And then you have the best of the possible worlds because they will naturally go where the impact is. And AMR is such a clear case in which change a few things in the way in which you pay for antibiotics, and you will have companies back into the game investing in antibiotics, and then you don't call it impact investing anymore. It's just investing and you have a lot of money and you've achieved the impact. So the impact investing team maintains that element of this philanthropic or altruistic motive that will always remain limited within our capitalistic society. Whether we like it or not, it is the way in which the money is distributed and raised.
When you did your PhD at, as you mentioned, London School of Economic Political Science, the focus on the international relations, human rights, it was access to medicines, which then is access to antibiotics. So this is a passion, and you're now involved in the innovative chain with CARB-X and forming strategic partnerships. Are those two things coming together in any way?
My responsibility is fundamentally the relationship with governments and the politicians and ensuring that what we do is relevant to them and is actionable to them. What is fascinating about antimicrobial resistance is that it is, in reality, an access to medicine issue, but even more complex than access to medicine is it is fundamentally a dilemma between the right balance between access to medicine today and access to medicine in the future. So what we're trying to do is to find the right balance and the right innovation framework to ensure that we can give the right antibiotics to the right patients at the right time today to ensure also that future patients will have access to the right antibiotic at the right time in the future. And what we don't want is to use antibiotics excessively or inappropriately, so to expand access to medicine today in a way which is not sustainable, because we know that will create potential problems in the future for our children. So when I started to work on access to medicine, the main conversation was fundamentally the big imbalance between high-income countries and low- and middle-income countries. How do you maintain a strong innovation environment in high-income countries without creating too many barriers for patients in low- and middle-income countries to access innovation as quickly as patients in rich countries? AMAR adds a layer of complexity to that problem, because we do have an access to medicine problem in AMR as well. I know many old antibiotics are not available or affordable or accessible in low middle income countries today. But it adds this layer of complexity about the fact that you always need to take into consideration the patients of the future as well. This is not the case for other types of medicines, which do not lose efficacy a long time. It's not that creating new markets and expanding access today will be in any way detrimental to the patients of the future. But this is the case with antibiotics. I know you don't want to expand access to medicine for antibiotics in an inappropriate way, because this will be in the end a liability for the patients of the future. And so this is where it became even more exciting to work on AMR, adding this layer of complexity. I have to say, I started to work in AMR also at the time in which it was mainly perceived as a problem of the future and as a smart way for governments to prevent a very significant problem to happen. So this was in 2015, 2016. I think that narrative has changed significantly since 2021, when there has been a new report published in The Lancet, which has showed that in reality, antimicrobial resistance is a killer and one of the most significant killers today already. And so it's not anymore a question of, are we smart enough to prevent this slow-moving pandemic to hit us 20 years from now? It has become an issue related to are we doing our best to save many lives of the most vulnerable populations, mainly small children and or immunocompressed patients, old people in low and middle income countries, while at the same time we're doing our vested interest in high income countries as well to prevent this slow moving pandemic to hit us and to hit our children. It was fascinating to see how the community had to change the narrative as well. And this is what happened also with the G7 governments. And this is what we're trying to do with the presidency of Italy and what we hope to get next year with this high-level meeting at the United Nations General Assembly, which is moving away from a conversation about we need to be smart today to prevent something happening in 10, 15 years, and moving into something that this is an urgent thing that we need to address today, because there is more than 1 million people dying because of antibiotic resistance now.
I am Massimo Sartelli from Italy. I am a surgeon and I am interested in antimicrobial resistance, and I am very happy to participate in this podcast.
You've been practicing, you've been a surgeon for over 20 years. As far as issues related to antibiotic resistance and then stewardship, have you seen some changes over the last couple decades?
Yes. Declines in mortality and morbidity have been one of the great achievements of public health. This was made possible by greater access to care, such as antimicrobials, such as antibiotics, begins with the discovery of penicillin by Alexander Fleming in the late 1920s, antibiotics have changed the field of medicine. They have saved millions of lives each year and have been used prophylactically for the prevention of infectious diseases. Antimicrobial resistance is a global burden, is a great burden for all people around the world. Antimicrobial resistance occurs as bacteria, virus, fungi evolve antimicrobial defense mechanism and reduces treatment efficacy and increasing the risk of treatment failure. Infection caused by antimicrobial resistance pose a global challenge, a great problem for the world, and it is a complex and multifaceted issue that involves not only human beings but also animals and environment. And multi-sectorial, multidisciplinary collaborations are necessary to tackle antimicrobial resistance.
As a surgeon, you know better than anyone how important infection control is.
Although antimicrobial resistance is a global problem, healthcare workers, including surgeons, play a central role in preventing the emergence and the spread of resistance, of antimicrobial resistance. We can tackle antimicrobial resistance by using appropriately antibiotics or respecting infection prevention and control measures, such as hand hygiene, to prevent healthcare-associated infections. It is very important to be aware of the problem, and all the world healthcare workers are involved in this battle, in this involvedness global battle. Thanks for this podcast, because it can improve awareness in this problem. I am very happy to participate, because it is very important to increase awareness about antimicrobial resistance and the need for a correct use of antibiotics among healthcare workers around the world.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you work with other health professionals, the nurses, the pharmacists?
It is very important to understand the tackle to antimicrobial resistance in the hospital setting is a multidisciplinary battle. I think that everyone is involved in this burden. We must create an alliance with infectious disease specialists, with hospital pharmacists, with nurses, with epidemiologists, with microbiologists, with prescribers, with surgeons and intensivists. It is very important, this multidisciplinary approach in this problem. Antimicrobial stewards should involve all the figures of all professionals involved in this problem. Everyone is important in this burden in the hospital setting. Hospital-based programs dedicated to improving antibiotic use, commonly referred to as antimicrobial stewardship programs, can both optimize the management of infection and reduce adverse events associated with antibiotic use. Therefore, every hospital around the world should use existing resources to create an effective multidisciplinary antimicrobial stewardship team. In recent years, awareness towards antimicrobial resistance and antimicrobial stewardship is increasing, even if there is still a lot of work to do.
You're speaking to us today from central Italy. What are some of the differences in healthcare and AMR across different regions of the country?
There are a lot of differences in access to care and in access to antimicrobial stewardship. Yeah. There is a difference between the south and the north, yeah. But there is a great difference in access to care between small hospital and great and large hospital that have all the technologies ensuring high level care. I'm very proud because in Italy we have, despite the difficulties, we still have a universal healthcare system. We are able to treat everyone. It is very difficult, but I'm very proud of the Italian system because we have a universal system that can treat everyone. Concerning antimicrobial stewardship programs in Italy, many hospitals remain without effective programs. On November 2, 2017, the Ministry of Health published the first national antimicrobial resistance plan, So we have an Italian antimicrobial resistant plan. It is based on five points. The 5 points are improving awareness and education of health professionals, citizens, stakeholders, monitoring the phenomenon of antimicrobial resistance to improve infection prevention control, optimizing the use of antimicrobials in the field of human and animal health, and increasing and supporting research and innovation. It is very important that in our country, but in all countries of the world, every hospital should have an antimicrobial stewardship program organized according to their resources.
So many roles, and you've performed thousands of surgeries. But in addition to doing this, you also are the founder and director of the Global Alliance for Infections in Surgery. What caused you to found this organization, and tell us what it's focused on?
In 2016, I founded the Global Alliance for Infection in Surgery. And after the foundation, in few weeks, experts from 89 countries worldwide joined the International Advisory Board. This alliance, promoted by the World Society of Emergency Surgery, people and professionals from about 100 countries around the world, from the 5 continents. And we believe that we need a disciplinary approach. We believe that we must involve all professionals involved in the battle. So in the Alliance, we involve epidemiologists, infection prevention control specialists, infectious disease specialists, microbiologists, clinical pharmacologists, hospital pharmacists, intensivists, nurses, and surgeons, general and emergency surgeons. But this is the message of the podcast, is the multidisciplinary approach in the infections. This pivotal in the hospital setting to create a comprehensive approach to infections. I am a surgeon, but I must collaborate with the microbiologist, with the infectious disease specialist, with the infection prevention and control specialist. It is very important that this multidisciplinary approach in the management, the prevention, the management of the infections in across the surgical pathway, but in the whole hospital setting.
We've spoken about Italy quite a bit, but your organization is global. What actions do we need to take globally to address antimicrobial resistance?
Antimicrobial resistance poses a global challenge. No single country, however effective it is at containing resistance within its boundaries, can protect itself from the spreading of resistant bacteria. So the global nature of antimicrobial resistance calls for a global response, both in the geographic sense and across the whole range of sectors involved. Nobody, it is very important that nobody is exempt from the problem, nor from playing a role in the solution. What we need to tackle antimicrobial resistance? What we need is a multidisciplinary approach, considering also the great diversity of social, economic, political, and cultural contexts in which antimicrobial resistance emerges and spreads. What we need are strategies to increase awareness about antimicrobial resistance in order to implement a more effective intervention, and this podcast is an example. What we need is that antimicrobial resistance should be recognized as a fundamental problem, a gross problem for the world. Antimicrobial resistance is a challenge to global development. Antimicrobial effectiveness must be looked upon as a limited global public good on the verge of becoming scarce. You know that the COVID pandemic has highlighted the need for resilient health system, and COVID-19 has highlighted the need for a collaboration in scientific, medical, social, and political aspects. We should remember that COVID-19 is a pandemic, but also antimicrobial resistance is a pandemic. However, it is a silent pandemic. It is important to combat it altogether.
What actions can we all take to reduce drug-resistant infections?
There are many different actions that we can all take. I think on a personal level, of course, it comes to using antimicrobials appropriately, using antimicrobials when they are needed and they are prescribed by your physicians and doctor. But also on a more broader level, there is the issue of antimicrobials in the environment and antimicrobial use in the agriculture and livestock. And so I think there is a role for citizens and the public as well to demand more transparency when it comes to really understanding how antimicrobials are used in agriculture.
Vaccination policy is extremely important to reduce the use of antibiotics. The effect of the people vaccinated is also the reduced number of infections, so the reduced number of use of antibiotics.
The most important thing is to be aware of the problem, inform yourself, and engage politically on this topic. This is something that requires action not only at the individual level, but also at the government level, at the international level. And so it is very important that citizens engage with their politicians and raise awareness about the topic and make politicians understand that this is a priority for them. And this is similar, I think, to climate change and other big significant problems. I think you need politicians and governments to intervene to address, you know, market failures and to incentivize the right type of behavior.
It is very important to control infection in surgical settings, to believe in prevention and to understand that before treating, we must prevent infections.
You've been listening to Superbugs and You, a podcast series focused on true stories from scientists and patients around the world on the threat of antimicrobial resistance. This series is co-created by the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy and the Antimicrobial Resistance Fighter Coalition. The podcast is produced by Elise Holmes, Diane Flahart, and Natalie Vestin. For more news and information on antimicrobial resistance and stewardship, check out our websites, cidrap.umn.edu/ASP and antimicrobialresistancefighters.org. You can also find us on Twitter, @CIDRAP_ASP and @AM Resistance.